Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to Early Work. It's the podcast in which I ask famous performers and writers to read me the creative writing of their younger years. And today's guest is the perfect candidate for that sort of thing. It's Sarah Pascoe. And what a rich childhood of creativity and doing things that she had, like setting up a bullying line and singing in assemblies or putting on a remixed Oliver Twist with her sister. Not to mention the absolutely absurd parody songs Sarah used to write when she was much older than she should have been. And then onto the work itself. She had a hard drive full of poems with titles that made Sarah very nervous to read to you, the baying public, with, by the way, some of the most dramatic final lines available in poetry. And then, to top it all off, a version of the Fresh Prince theme tune, all about Hamlet, dutifully rapped for us by Sarah to close us out. A great revision tool for anyone who has exams coming up, even though all exams have been cancelled indefinitely. Plus, once or twice in this episode, Sarah's dog Mouse was barking or crying, and she would tell him to eat his bone because that would make him feel better. And every time she said something like that, it made me laugh so much when I was listening back to it. I was just laughing so much. Oh, eat your bone, she says. It cracked me up. This is one of the greats, okay? This is one of the great early works. This is truly one of the seminal podcast episodes of the 21st century. So here you go. Enjoy. Joining me this week on Early Work is the wonderful Sarah Pascoe. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Rhys.
How are you?
I feel very shy. This is my worst nightmare.
Oh, good. Lovely stuff.
I went up in the loft to find some old books of writing, and it was really hard. And then I found an old hard drive, and I should have read through, but I couldn't because I felt so physically sick just seeing the titles of my poems.
Oh, great. For those of you who don't know Sarah is probably best known for in 2015 when we did a gig in a fish restaurant together called Monkey Business, and the door to the street was next to the stage area. Everyone went on stage in their coat so that they could immediately leave because of how bad it was.
Oh, what a great memory. I don't remember you being there.
Yeah.
But I remember, do you know what? I remember the audacity I had at that gig. I must have been at some point where I thought I was really good at comedy, because I remember watching other people struggle thinking, I'm going to smash this. And really not.
It's
really
always not. The way. Yeah. It's always the way, isn't it? Where you think, yeah, all right, but they don't have my material.
Did you ever gig with for him again after that?
Absolutely not. Yeah, also, the reason that you might not remember me being there is because what happened at that gig is, it's one of my favourite moments ever, despite the gig being awful, is I got there and Martin, the guy who ran the gig, said, is it Rhys Jones or Rhys James? And I said, it's Rhys James. And he said, oh, but it's Rhys Jones on Facebook, isn't it? And I said, yeah, well, my name is Rhys Jones, but I go by Rhys James for comedy. And he said, okay, I need to get that in my head. Okay, Rhys James, not Rhys Jones. James, not Jones. James, not Jones. James, not Jones. And then when he went on stage, he went, please welcome to the stage your next act, Ryan Beecham.
That's, do you know what? And that's one of the good Martin Besserman stories.
It's fantastic. Yeah, exactly. It was one of the only times where I've ever like not been able to start a set because I was crying with laughter. I walked onto the stage in tears. Sorry, but I don't know. I don't know what to do here. What a wonderful memory to kick off with. Right, Sarah, if I had to guess what you were like at school, and I do, I put what I've written. I pre-wrote this. I said it's really hard to tell if you were a book girl or if you smoked. So I reckon you might be the first person in history to be both. I can imagine you saying extremely conflicting phrases like, "Oi, fuck off, sir, I'm trying to read." I think you're definitely an outlier. I reckon you went your own way with stuff, which really puts a ceiling on how popular you can be. Like, you probably did stuff that other people wouldn't risk in case they got called weird, but you just couldn't see it as weird. Like when Napoleon Dynamite does that dance, or when the boy sings in About a Boy, and the characters can't comprehend that it's a bad idea. But I think you got away with it and you weren't ridiculed because the stuff you did wasn't embarrassing. It was just genuinely strange. And maybe you do like a skit or something in assembly and everyone would just be like, okay. And then they would just move on and not think about it anymore. I think you've got Ran for Head Girl written all over you. And I know you wanted to act when you were younger. So I reckon you told people you'd be famous, or if there was a vote for most likely to be famous and you didn't win, you would very calmly, but in lots of detail, explain to people why they were wrong. Is any of that correct?
It's so much of it is correct, apart from I was ridiculed. So it's what you've done is you've taken me, and you know me as like now, and like nearly 40, quite successful.
Yeah.
And you've filmified my backstory to make it like, she was always going to be this way. So I was weird. I did do assemblies. Sorry, that's my dog crying. Hello, just eat your bone. I did sign birthday cards. My leavers shirt, you know, like leavers at school, I signed it Sarah Pascoe, the famous one. So that when they looked back, they were like, called it, she knew.
You're the only person ever to do that and then actually become famous.
I know.
You are the luckiest.
It makes me... Sorry, my dog's bugging. Hey, shush. It makes me feel mentally ill because... if you wish something and then it happens, you feel like you're God. You're like, I could have just wished for anything. Yeah. Like, every time I'm on a TV program that I used to watch, I literally sit there as the music starts and I'm like, oh, I'm mentally ill. I'm in a hospital somewhere watching TV thinking I'm inside it.
Yeah, fuck, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then like, so years ago when you dreamt of being on Rhys James's Early Work podcast, now you must be watching this on Zoom thinking, oh no, this isn't happening. I'm just listening to the podcast.
Before you were even born, I had the idea for your podcast, and then I had to wait for you to be born. I was like the wise men waiting for baby Jesus to come along.
Thank you very much. I mean, I appreciate you calling me the baby Jesus. You're not the first person. I did it in my own yearbook, just like you.
Did you really?
I signed it Rhys James, the baby Jesus.
The baby
on everyone's
Jesus.
Leavers hoodie. Yeah. Was any of the other stuff... So you did assemblies. What sort of stuff did you do in assemblies?
So the thing is, I liked how you described it like someone like Napoleon Dynamite, because I definitely wasn't in any way... cool or socially acceptable, but I did think I had a duty to my peers to both entertain and educate. And I look back and I think that fearlessness then, that didn't care that people didn't like me, has prepared me for my job. Or my personality meant that comedy was the best job for me to do, because I really don't care if people like me as long as they're looking at me. Like, that feels like the sensible way. Like, here, guys, over here, let me tell you why you shouldn't shoplift in the Body Shop. and I did want to be an actor. And so because there wasn't enough like drama at my school, I used to write stuff or abridge existing plays. Like, a very memorable one is that I did a two-woman version of Oliver with my sister Cheryl. where we played all the parts, and also we put in some songs from other musicals, because we thought that the song I Feel Pretty, which said I feel pretty and gay, was the funniest song that had ever been written. So we put that in for Fagin to sing, and we thought that was the funniest thing ever. Not head girl, not in any... I didn't smoke at school. I smoked from 18. And I did read, but I read Enid Blyton in the toilets because I didn't have any friends. So I wasn't like reading clever books. I was reading baby books like Moonface and the Magic Faraway Tree. Yeah.
You're right. I definitely have made this. I've made it a bit more Hollywood.
Yeah.
Because I've made it. I've basically described it, but made it nice. So none of the darkness is in it. I've sort of made it an A24 film. It's like this really sweet coming of age. It's like I can imagine it. I imagine it being sunny. Obviously, it wasn't.
Have you seen Bo Burnham's film?
Yes, yeah, Eighth Grade,
Yeah, which I think what that film does so brilliantly is it actually is painful to watch because he hasn't made it amazing.
Like, it's not nice.
It's so uncomfortable how clear her wants and needs are.
So your assemblies were like PSAs.
Yeah.
Were you telling people, don't do this, be nice?
It was much more that I felt the teachers weren't... I lost faith in teachers, like, at the end of primary school. And And this is where I'd say all of my schools, which were just normal schools, they never, ever tried to quash me. The teachers were just like, okay, if you want to do that, do it. So I didn't think we were talking enough about war. I felt that history wasn't dealing with it enough, and that what they needed was me to perform war poetry in assembly so that we'd never made the mistakes that our forebears did, stuff like that.
I originally wrote that I thought you were doing potentially skits in assemblies or like proper, like meaningful readings of like important things.
Yeah,
I nearly guessed the Lord's Prayer, but I thought that was maybe too far. War poetry,
yeah, that kind of thing. My third Edinburgh show, I did in the style of my old school assemblies, about my school assemblies, in a school uniform. I really revisited it there.
What was the response like when you would read war poems in assembly? I mean, people presumably clap at the end because it's a poem.
Yeah, I would never say I had a good gig. which again is really good practice, but children would probably rather be in assembly than in a lesson, so an extra 10 minutes listening to me was just like blah. It wasn't like, oh great, Sarah tried her best. They didn't care and they didn't enjoy it, I would say.
So, but no one ever did no one ever mention it, so no one ever then went afterwards was like, oh, what you did in assembly with that Wilfred Owen poem, you know, that was really brilliant. People just didn't say anything.
Oh, absolutely not. No.
What about teachers? Teachers must have been impressed.
Well, my sister Cheryl is now a teacher. She's an English teacher. And she says that looking back on us, when she sees pupils that like have any kind of originality or individuality, she loves it so much. And she says the teachers actually would have been very entertained by the audacity of us going, right, miss, I've got an idea. Book me a slot, 15 minutes Friday. Yeah. And also... can we dance? Because that's the other thing, is that because we like performing, we might do something like, I set up a bully line at school to help children that were being bullied. It was something I really believed in. We did not help a single pupil because no one came to us. But I did. All of the people who are trained for bully line, we'd sing Lean On Me in assembly once a term. And I would like teach them the harmonies. I know.
I mean, surely that is just creating more bullying. I mean, were you doing some sort of heist where you're creating more work for yourself?
Yes.
You're getting more calls on your premium line. Are you still in touch with any of those teachers that would have been impressed?
Well, what happens is, and you might know this as well, but once you're on TV, people crawl out of the woodwork to go, I always knew it. It's like, no, you didn't. But no, I actually had some really lovely teachers. There was one teacher who was my form tutor. And by the time I got to my GCSEs, my GCSE maths exam was on my 16th birthday, so I decided to get drunk the day before, and I didn't actually go in for my GCSE. And she drove to my house and got me out of bed and took me to the exam. So I did half of it. And so people like her, she got back in touch to say, like, well done, and I've always like worried about you, and I'm glad it was okay. And so stuff like that was really nice, where you go, actually, they must look and go, the fact that you seem successful, it's like, oh, okay, I see, that's what you were going to end up and do. And again, these are teachers I told, I don't need to do this, mate, because I'm going to win an Oscar by the time I'm 22.
Did you say that?
Yeah.
Did you actually say that phrase?
Yes, I did. One of the last days at school, we'd all rehearsed for a concert, and then I got offered a non-speaking role for one night at the Riverside Studios. And I pulled out, and the teacher said to me that commitment's really important. And I was like, excuse me, show business is about big breaks, not about rehearsals. Okay, so, yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, what is... I feel like when you're a teenager, saying you're going to do something by 22, it's such a specific age. Is that because you were trying to be like someone?
I definitely thought I was going to be like a... I thought I was going to be... Number one, 22 sounded so old by then.
Yeah.
And also, I was trying to think of the... I wouldn't have known this word then, but you know, like a wunderkind. Like I wanted to be a child prodigy. I wanted to be a teen pop sensation who got an Oscar.
Yeah. Okay, so you wanted like to have both an Oscar and an MTV award for Best
Absolutely.
Kiss.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I thought I was being realistic, but I think I must have heard someone else at drama club say I want an Oscar by 22, and I thought, okay, if you do, so do I. I think I heard someone saying it and thought that's a cool thing to say to people.
At what point did it dawn on you that that probably wasn't going to happen? Has it dawned on
you? Do you not think it's going to happen?
Not by 22. I think the Oscar might, but not by 22.
Probably what happened is about 21 and a half, I thought, competitions are about mediocrity, which is something my dad says. Competitions reward mediocrity. The more people you please, you don't want to be in the middle. So I probably by then was like, oh, the Oscars, rolling my eyes.
Yeah. The Oscars are corrupt anyway. Yeah. It's all just it's fake. Yeah, people are buying those awards.
Reese, have you ever been a judge on something?
Yeah, like I've judged a heat of a stand-up competition, yeah.
Yeah, so now that I've been a judge, I judged a literary prize a couple of years ago, and now that I've been in the room and I've seen the conversation that happens, I never care ever again about anything.
Yeah.
Once you've actually seen people arguing and what they argue about and how, literally weighing up the merit of things, and it's with this literary prize, so all of us had to read 200 books, and then you came together and you had to pitch... basically for the long list, and literally there's a woman at the front of the table holding books in the air, and if it was one of the ones you'd read, you had to go yes or no. There was no discussion, and it literally got thrown into the corner. It's like, it's years of people's lives.
Oh my God.
And some of these books are like by people like Zadie Smith or Lionel Shriver. These are people who have already won all the awards. They're like immense, and you're literally watching someone going, no. And like just thrown, and you go, that's what they do. That's what they do in those rooms.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that when Early Work doesn't get nominated for the British Podcast Awards, then it's because you said no when someone held it up.
Yeah. Not me. I'd have gone, give it an award. He guessed almost exactly what my school life was like.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just give him an award, but maybe a psychology award instead. Well, actually, that was you talking about skipping your performance because you had a non-speaking role. It reminded me of... the second gig I did or the third gig I did or something was a Laughing Horse quarterfinal, but obviously at the time, because I got through something, was the biggest deal of my life. But it happened to clash with my best friend's 18th birthday, where he was having a big party. That was a big deal. It was also like the first 18th birthday. So it's a huge deal, and I didn't go, and I went and absolutely died so hard at this quarterfinal, because also I'd done three gigs at the time, and I'd only ever done well. So I was like, sorry, I can't come to your party. I'm a genius.
Yeah.
And geniuses are busy.
The first gig I died at was the Hackney Empire first, you know, audition, basically. And I didn't know gigs could go that badly until it was happening. And I didn't have any of the tools because it had never happened before. It's a horrible realization.
The first time I properly died, I lay down on the floor in the gig while I was on stage. I'd seen Stuart Lee do it 2 weeks earlier.
I was going to ask, who did you see do it?
It was funny is because he was, look at this, it's a man on the floor. And then you rewatch the routine and go, no, there's a lot of building up. There's about 25 minutes to build up to him being on the floor. It all makes perfect sense narratively. Whereas I just went, I'll just pop down here for a bit, see if that helps. Nope, it's made things considerably worse.
Now they've called an ambulance. He's having a panic attack. Yeah.
Well, I will tell you that getting heckled while you're on the floor, you cannot recover. If you're dying and you get heckled anyway, it's hard to recover. But when you're lying on the floor and in a little gap where it's silent for a bit, someone shouts, "What are you going to do on your gap year?" You will not recover in the gig.
I don't think that's that bad. I don't think that's that bad. I think that you were brave to try something else. Like, this isn't working. Yeah. I'll try lying down. You were learning from a master of the craft, Stuart Lee.
Yeah.
my Hackney Empire was just silence. And then I thought, okay, this is bad. And then I was followed. The next act was a dog with a balloon. And he just killed everyone. Like, everyone was so excited to see him. And it was the first night I met a comedian called Caroline Maybe. And it's a funny story that we have in our friendship, because I went up to her after being absolutely so dog shit on stage and said, "Hi, my name's Sarah. I think we're really similar. Like, we do a lot of the similar gigs." And she was so rude to me. And then she was like, but I was literally like, "Who is this girl and how dare she?"
Yeah.
"How dare she come up and go, 'By the way, you've been doing stand-up for 6 years. I'm the same.'"
Oh my god. And she's watching the stage thinking, "No, I've got more in common with that dog and that balloon."
Yeah, I'm the dog and the balloon, love.
Yeah. Were there any specific subjects at school that you thrived in particularly? Like, I would imagine English and drama being the two.
Yeah, I loved English and drama. English was really easy, and drama I did like, but I was very bossy. And I also got into fights, Rhys. This is something we haven't touched upon yet, but I liked to fight at school.
That's classic drama kids, isn't it? They love fighting.
Yeah. Well, that's it. So a lot of my memories of drama, like, there was a boy called Tony. I won't say his full name, but he used the word prostitute, which I found an offensive term. And especially in the way that he was using it about women. So I peanutted him. You know what that is when you strangle someone with their tie and everyone's like trying to get us off each other. So that was the kind of thing I did in drama. Like, it got quite impassioned. And again, I think I really thought that drama should be educational. So GCSE drama, we did our piece about how you shouldn't join a cult or do drugs. Which
yeah,
I think is what all GCSE dramas are about.
I've never heard the cult thing. But the drugs thing, big time.
This was a cult. We found out, someone must have told us that if you put Vicks Vapor Rub in your eyes, you cry. So absolutely every single person in our class had Vicks Vapor Rub in their eyes and was just like weeping, going, "If I hadn't joined this cult and done all these drugs."
Oh my God. That is so funny. I remember we ordered a bunch of tear sticks when we were doing our GCSE drama performance, and they didn't really work. And also, like, there was one boy in the drama group who'd be like, "You can always tell on TV when someone's used tear sticks because the tears come from the centre of the eye, not from the tear ducts."
Oh my God.
What the fuck are you talking about? Yeah, absolute nonsense. In my GCSE drama performance, the actual exam performance, in scene one, I obviously had to be pretending to do some cocaine. And in that scene where I was literally just pretending to do cocaine, I got a nosebleed and I had to do the rest of the performance with a nosebleed.
That's amazing acting.
Yeah. And I had to, what was really weird about it is that all the other exams, like, if you wrote your own piece, you could improvise and you could just pretend that's what you wrote. Mm. So I could have just written it in. This is the one where we were doing a play with a script and you lost marks if you got a word wrong. And so I was just like, I mean, I can't possibly go, "God, yeah, and this fucking nosebleed's a nightmare as well.
Yeah.
I can't shift this." Yeah. So I had to I just went off stage. I just ripped up the scripts we had at the side of the stage, just stuffed them up my nose. And then I just carried on as normal. But everyone else in the group who wasn't in the first scene would then look at me when I came on stage next to them, just being like, "What the fuck is he doing?" Not knowing I had a nosebleed. And then there was a bit where I was getting divorced, obviously, because of my coke addiction.
Yeah.
And I had to spin round to the girl I was shouting at and go "You don't understand." As I spun round, the paper flew out of my nose into the audience.
I had
my blood on it.
Did anyone film it, Rhys? Do you feel like someone might have had a video camera?
I hope not. I mean, I'm sure that would have emerged by now. What are they waiting for? Is this going to be like when Joel Dommett went in the jungle and that video finally came out?
Yeah, do you have it? Or if you even had the script, because now I'm thinking maybe I'll do a podcast where everyone just does their GCSE drama scripts now.
Yeah. Everyone just does the exact GCSE drama show they had to do.
I would be obsessed with it because...
People did, in the first scene when I was doing the coke and the nosebleed started, people thought people were blown away, thinking it was the best prop of all time.
Yeah. I feel like, how's he done that? I feel like inside, you're a really amazing actor. Like, you're the, even the very sensitive membranes in your nose were like, how would I behave if I was having cocaine shoved next to me? I know what I'd do. I'd start bleeding.
Yeah. Time to switch on, baby. It's showtime.
Yeah, I think that's it. You're more method than you're even conscious of.
Yeah, I wasn't prepared to be that method. And then I found out, so I just carried on, and then like obviously it massively affected the performance. And then afterwards I found out that they were like, oh no, I mean, if something like that happens, you can just stop and we can just wait. And I was like, well, fucking hell, tell me that. But yeah. I think what happens is I got special consideration, so they gave me an extra 20% of my grade.
What was your grade?
Oh, it was an A. Come on. See,
this is bullshit. No, this is bullshit because my school, no one ever got A's at GCSE drama, and the theory was that the drama teacher was jealous of our talent. they were like, all teachers are failed actors. That's why they're so jealous of how good we are, and they mark us down.
Yeah. I love the idea that all teachers, not just all drama teachers, all teachers are failed actors.
Failed actors. Yeah, they used to have hope actually, and used to have hope and ambition like me, Miss. But now you're just teaching me, and it burns, and you can't bear it.
Maybe it's time to move on to the work. What sort of work do you have for us?
Well,
I mean,
are
you still apprehensive?
Yes. Well, I feel like you've got a bit more background now. So I know you'll be very... So basically, for a long time, I didn't ever want to be a writer, but I did write. So these poems that I have from my late teens, early 20s, were not poems that I ever thought, oh, I would like to write a book of poetry. I started writing poems because actually it was connected to being like a teen pop sensation. What I really saw was me being a musician, but I can't play an instrument.
So they were kind of lyrics, but without the musical talent. Yeah.
Yeah. So that kind of thing. And, oh God, it just makes me feel sick. And I was thinking today, why do I feel so sick about it? And I realized the minute I found comedy, you can make fun of yourself. So whenever you do try to express something, you're expressing it with this framework of, well, I'm a knob and an idiot, and what do I know? And then it's kind of acceptable that you go, but here's what I feel, or here's what I think. Whereas this stuff is very earnest. Before I'd learned to do that, it's the earnestness. It kills me.
It's a comedy podcast. I mean, this is why this podcast exists, is me exercising demons of this period where I just wrote heartbreak poetry for ages and ages, and then they're still on my laptop, so if I read them I have to go, right, you got to find a way to at least a bit monetize it.
Okay,
you've got to find a way to process it, so don't worry when you come on and you're embarrassed, that's perfect, because now you get to go either, oh, this is actually better than I thought, or God, what a prick I was.
It's not that it's better than I thought, it's the earnestness. It wouldn't matter how good they were, it's that I hadn't learned that poetry is about dissembling things. It's about metaphor. It's about creating something that's so universal that it's about all human beings, whereas my poetry is very much only about me. Oh God, it's so bad. I'm going to read you some of the titles.
Oh, why don't you read me some titles and can I select the first one?
Okay, yeah, you can. So, After the Phone is one. Bruised Fruit is one I really don't want you to choose.
Okay.
Canal Poem. This one was actually published on MySpace. I put some of my poems on my MySpace page, and this publisher said if I paid £20, they could go in a book of poems with some other people's poems, and then all you had to do is sell that book of poems to your friends and you would make money. So did you know I'm actually a published poet? Days in Between, that sounds awful, don't remember it. Endgame sounds awful, don't remember it. Genius, Japan, London One, Lonely Dog, My Ex, spelled EXE, which is incorrect. My New Diary, My Newest Diary.
Wow.
Someone I Used to Sleep With, and Thank You to Sunny Benches. Now, that all makes me feel ill, and that's just titles.
Okay, so you don't want me to pick Bruised Fruit, so I will honour you and not pick that. I won't pick it yet. We'll get to it. Let's build up to it. I will go for the first one.
Yeah.
Endgame.
Okay. Okay, God. I'm just going to read it. Otherwise, I'll pretend my... Okay, end game, underlined. I only gave you the first half of that note. The good half. The bit where I explain that every time I feel alive and every time something brilliant happens and I am filled with stars and sunshine, I race to share it with you. I destroyed the other bit, the bad half. Describing the brick wall that greets me when I arrive gleefully. How you managed to slam me right into the earth when you look away and laugh derisively. Oh God, I am so happy, and that is what is wrong. So filled with hope when I'm on my own. There is a fictional boyfriend that travels the town on the tube with me, and I feel so sad when being fucked by the reality.
Oh, I love it.
I used the word fuck in a poem.
I mean, that is fantastic. To be fair, actually, the start of the poem, I was like, this isn't embarrassing. This is fine. It's all like, I like the note thing. Good half of the note, didn't do the half. I mean, the brick wall. It wasn't about what I thought it was about, it turns out.
Yeah.
Because
it
starts off all like, oh, it feels like when I think about you, I get stars and sunshine and I feel amazing and I want to share it with you. And then in reality, I meet you and you're just a brick wall and you're sort of ambivalent and not interested. And then it turns out this person doesn't exist.
Yeah.
It's a fictional boyfriend that's on the tube. Or is that just because you want a better boyfriend?
Oh, no. So it's saying that I've made up the really good boyfriend in my head. So the reality is
not
great.
The reality is the brick wall that keeps fucking you.
But do you know, so the things that annoy me about myself, you know, like, it's an early writer thing, but when you just rely on cliches. So things like being slammed right into the earth. Now that's what makes me now my skin crawls. Because it's like, that's not how it feels and that's not what you mean. That's a phrase you have taken from other writers and applied to your own situation.
Yeah. And as a phrase, fucked by reality is an extremely teenage poetry type of phrase.
Yeah.
Being fucked by reality.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Fucked by a concept.
Yeah.
Oh, how old were you when you wrote that? Do you know?
I think this was about 17 or 18 because I remember the boyfriend. I remember the boyfriend. Yeah.
Oh, well, end game.
We're not
so
together anymore. We're not together anymore, actually.
Oh, so you can talk about it. I remember the boyfriend because he's in the next room.
Yeah, because now he's my husband.
Yeah. Well, good luck. It sounds healthy. So I presume it's called Endgame because this was like just before you ended it.
I think it must be. But I think that's a term I've used without knowing what it meant properly because I feel like I only know that now, like post-university because of Samuel Beckett and learning what chess is. Like I didn't know I thought that meant ending. It was a posh way of saying ending.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, 100%. That's what you mean. And that's why I wonder if your poem, My Ex, spelled EXE, is like, maybe EXE is something. That's a file type on a computer. So maybe it's reference to...
Maybe it is.
A virus. Maybe it's about...
Because it's supposed to be My Ex Is. So it's the actual title is My Ex Is. EXES. So I've just saved it wrong. So it is actually... Oh, I know why. Because on Word, you can't put an apostrophe in the title of a document. So that's why.
Is this document a list of your exes or is it a poem?
No, I did have a list actually for ages. I had a list of everyone I slept with, and I kept it in a teapot. Don't know why it was in a teapot. But I was telling Sarah Barron this the other day because she did stand up about there was a point where what I liked doing after I'd had sex with a new person is like writing the number that they were on their back with my finger, but they didn't know, like tracing it on there like 11.
And you're telling me I was the one making your life seem like a film.
But I thought I was, they thought I was being like, you know, affectionate and I wasn't. I was marking them like, there you go. That's you. Now you know I slept with 11 people.
Yeah. 11's just the easiest number to write on someone's back without them realising.
Yeah. Also, I think it's Giggs's number, so it's pretty cool.
There you go.
Giggs number 11? There you go.
Maybe that's what people will think. Every time you do it,
she loves Man United.
Does she think I'm Ryan Giggs?
Number seven, Lee Sharp. Sorry, I'm aging myself as well. They're the years I was sexually active. It's when Man United was doing the treble.
And it was famously with the Man United team, wasn't it?
In my absolute dreams, I've got a 22-year-old with an Oscar who's bedded the entire Manchester United team of the late 90s.
Did him an order so he could write the correct number.
The Red Devil is what I call my vagina.
Okay, I'm going to pick another poem now.
Okay.
And I'm going to go for Genius. Surely this is going to be some arrogant poetry.
Well, you'd hope so. I don't remember it, so I'm scared. This one rhymes. I am a genius. Why? Can't you tell? Probably not, as I hide it so well. I am a beauty, but don't like to brag. So disguise my figure in inches of flab. I am so happy, but don't want to show. Because then you will see it, and then you will know.
Wow. Okay. There's actually some interesting stuff to unpack there.
But it's interesting. Both of my sad poems talk about how happy I am. Like, actually, that I have all this happiness, apparently.
But it's not real in that one, surely. Mm. What I took from this poem is that all of this is, you're not these things, right? Maybe the genius thing you believe.
I don't know.
But you've gone, when you say, because I am a beauty, but I hide it in flab.
Exactly.
Isn't it basically saying,
I'm really fat.
I know, it's kind of saying I am all of this beneath it. I think maybe because you say I am so happy, but I don't show it.
Yeah.
I'm a genius, but you don't know. And I'm beautiful, but I don't look it. It's what you're saying.
It's being
so
sarcastic.
Beneath all of these things, it's going, you think that I'm an ugly idiot who's sad.
It's
well,
really
guess
sad.
What? I'm the opposite.
Guess what? Joke's on you. Because I'm not.
Oh, God. Yeah, great. That's good. Short poem.
Yes, sure. I mean, I never wrote really very long ones. What I found today, I was going through my pads that all look like this from that period, because they're all gifts from my dad. And I wrote a lot of parody songs, which I just have completely forgotten about. I found this one from when Jade Goody was in the Big Brother house. And I wrote a version of Ice Ice Baby about how she's not a nice, nice lady. It's like, what is it for? What was I doing?
I mean, fucking hell. And you didn't even have an assembly to sing this in at the time.
No, but I do look, and this is what I would say, if there's anyone listening who wants to do comedy or stand up and like, all of these things that are so embarrassing do prepare you for our job, because now that's my actual job. Like, I do the same thing. I would watch someone on TV and then write a thing and then go and say it, and it's completely legitimate now.
Yeah, you would have to, I mean, if at the time you were on Mock the Week, you would have to talk about Jade Goody.
Yeah.
And you could easily, you know, I mean, you couldn't get clear the rights to your song parody,
no,
but all the
but
jokes
I could
in
pretend,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd love to hear how you got the phrase Shilpa Poppadom to scan in that song.
Oh, do you want to find out?
Yeah. I mean, surely it's not actually in there.
It is. Oh, dear. Let me try and find it. Okay. Oh, look, I've changed all the words to the song Respect to be about STDs. Just why have I done that? Do you have an STD? If you do, don't sleep with me. It's to the tune of the song Respect. Why was I writing these parody songs?
I can't believe you've never performed these. I mean, even in an early show or something, I can't believe you never went, oh, I've got to use all that.
Well, no, but my very first set was about High School the Musical, and I did write songs, as in, so it was about, basically it was me pitching Secondary School the Musical with the songs that would be in it. So I think my early gigs, I did do this kind of stuff. I think it was the beginning.
The image of you going on stage and singing, do you have an STD? If you do, don't sleep with me, and then being upstage by a dog with a balloon.
I know, it's so unfair. It's so unfair. Oh, I can't find this stupid Jade Goody
song
all right. anymore. I'm sorry. I'll text it to you a line at a time when you've completely forgotten that we've had this conversation.
Yeah, and it takes me a line a week, and it'll take me 10 weeks to realise what the fuck this is until you get to the chorus. And I just think, Sarah's having a breakdown. Okay, right, I'll pick another poem, and I would like, I think I would like someone I used to sleep with.
Okay.
Very, it's got given me Gotye vibes, this.
Oh, wow. Okay. I probably thought here that was a bit Sylvia Plathy. There is something about the memory of sighs and proximity of pores and wideness of eyes. There was something about my days in your bed, but days is spelt D-A-Z-E.
Oh,
like
boy,
in
boy,
a
boy,
days.
Boy.
Boy, 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 indeed. There's something about my days in your bed that stays on my skin and won't leave my head. There is something about the softness of skin and insistent lips that won't stop living. There is something about those lies that I tell, still feeling your heat, recalling your smell. There is something missing, those days in your bed. My hope, my adventure, my senses are dead.
Wow.
Wow, yeah.
Yes, wow.
Okay. We've accidentally found out that we're actually am a genius.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, my senses are dead. My senses are dead.
It's all dead now.
The first line, when it says memory of size, is it size S-I-G-H-S or S-I-Z-E?
Oh, that's very funny. S-I-G-H-S, yeah.
Right, that's because I heard it, it's literally someone I used to sleep with is a name and it's the memory of size. And I was like, here we fucking go. All right.
Or the other third option is size, S-I-S, as in short for Simon.
The memory of various men called Simon.
There's two male comedians who are called Psy. They used to live together and have a thing called like Psy and Psy. And it could just be about both of them.
Just about you sleeping with them, remembering what size they are and how much that you would sigh when they left.
That's it. All three meanings. Actually, there's three levels to this and that's them.
And that's why he's so smart. And that's why your senses are dead.
Yeah.
Because of all the size. It's too difficult
too
to keep up.
Too many.
That's great. I think that stands up. That stands the test of time, that poem. I don't feel like you should feel any kind of hot shame about that one.
I do feel hot shame because it's just that thing that before you learn how to dissemble to make stuff that is kind of acceptable to say to other people. I think I wrote these things thinking I would have a biographer or like someone be rooting back through and then they would find these things and then they would piece me together like after I was dead. They were like, but what was she like? Oh, here we go. Oh my God, she was so loving. Oh my God, she was so heartbroken. Yeah. So, and it's me knowing that makes it unbearable.
Did you ever sort of half start writing an autobiography when you were younger?
Worse. I kept a diary from 14 up until 28 for my biographer. So I wrote it for them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good. Yeah. I mean, I had a month where I, not even a month. I did 3 days worth of me writing.
Mm.
I was writing an autobiography like it was 20 years in the future.
Oh, okay.
Going,
great.
At this point, I was I had just done this and I was this, and that was genuinely I had begun being a comedian at that point.
Yeah.
I'd only done like 10 gigs, but I was like, I probably better start. Oh, I got some interest from an agent today.
Yeah.
But it was more like, it was this day when I was first spotted by.
Yeah.
And I knew in that moment I would go on to have a semi-successful podcast.
Well, I do have a similar thing to that. So before I went to university, when I was 18, 19, 20, I was auditioning as trying to be an actor. And I wrote up every single one of my rejections in a folder so that when I was famous, someone could go, and oh my God, look how much rejection there was beforehand.
Oh my God.
And I used to sometimes make collages of them as well. I was trying to make art out of all of the no's because I was so sure the ending was 22 years old, we're waving my Oscar going, and you didn't want me for TAE in Maidstone, you idiot.
Thing is, though, because we're comedians, we talk about that and go, God, isn't that embarrassing to have done that, right? If you were in sport, and you would be considered an absolute legend, because there's a footballer who is a centre-back for Wales and now Tottenham, who got rejected from like the under 18s of Wales or something, and he pinned the thing to the inside of his bedroom door, the rejection letter saying you weren't picked, until he became their number one, like their best set defender. And everyone talks about it like, isn't that great for motivation? And it's like, when I hear that and go, that's the most embarrassing thing I've ever heard. And then you say, I've got this big art of rejection, and we all go, oh God, isn't that awful? It's just, we're in the wrong business to be doing that.
But I do think there's something about it. Like, there's something about not being very talented, but working really hard. And I'm not saying that's true of that footballer, but actually is really respectable, but at the same time is such a self-own. Like, I don't know. Do you ever get people who say to you that you've made them do comedy? And the answer is always, well, I saw you could do it. And I thought, if she can, anyone can. Part of it's good because you think it should be achievable. You should be able to see like the graph that goes on or behind the curtain. It's like, you're not born magic. You just put the work in and you keep trying. But there's this other part of them going like, yeah. And then I thought, if she can do it, I definitely can. It's like,
Fucking hell. She's getting laughs for that. Oh, I'm funnier than that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she bought a flat out of comedy. Then it's an open goal,
Okay, I couldn't let you not read Bruised Fruit. I think we have to hear Bruised Fruit.
But then you're going to read your poem, right? After I've read Bruised Fruit. Okay. I do remember this poem. There's a lot of... this is from a bit where I've obviously really hated myself. Bruised Fruit. Sodden, sullen. There's loads of commas in this. Looking at my face, looking back at me. Strange joy to behold my mushy lips and blown up eyes. Feeling proud of fat, globby tears, of hot, streaming snot. Puffy, wet and fragile. At least I look how I feel. I am bruised fruit. Soft and weepy sad. Feeling sorry as my heart tears and hoping that I rot.
Wow, I was not prepared for that last line.
There's always those last lines. They're always a little bit like, whoa, okay.
It's like I'm with the poem. I'm like, I get the message. I'm on board with the poem. And then the last line always fucking hits you. I mean, I guess that's what makes a good poem. I like when you describe fat, looking at your own fat, globby tears. That tells me that you had just used some Vicks vapor rub on your face.
That was straight after my GCSE drama, actually.
Yeah, you immediately went to the toilets and wrote this sodden, sullen, looking at my face poem.
What I used to do a lot, and I don't know if you did this, and it links into all of the self-examination writing, I used to love watching myself cry. And there comes a point where if you're crying, after a bit, you just stop crying because you're just looking at yourself. But I used to, and this is where this poem would be, I used to love really, I'd be like, and then think, I wonder what this looks like when I'm really crying. So I'm running to the mirror.
You know what?
Oh, it looks like that.
I've never heard that articulated before, and I do agree with it. I mean, oh God, but I do think that if I said this to a person who isn't a comedian, they'd be like, I don't. If you say it to a person who's got a job as an accountant, they'd be like, what? No, when you cry, you're just crying because you're sad. But I think I definitely agree. The last time I cried, which wasn't very long ago, I think I went to the bathroom and then I was just staring at myself crying in the mirror. And then obviously you suddenly just think, God, I look fantastic. Or you just think like, oh my God, I could cry in a film if I can do it now. Yeah. I'm not really emotional.
That's how I would have been then. I'd have been like, oh my God, I could be in Hollyoaks. I could be like one of the... Because I think one of the things I knew about acting was that Hollyoaks didn't get any rehearsal. So they had to do these really intense scenes, but they just have to film them really, like you get like two goes. So I'd be like, no, I could do this. Like, oh, my husband's dead. I could just use this. That'd be so good.
Wonderful. Well, I think Bruised Fruit isn't as embarrassing as you thought it was going to be. I think it's good. It's but before I move on to reading you one of my poems, I do have to score your work. And obviously, you've been on judging panels, so you know what this process is like. I'm just going to hold up poems and say no and chuck them in the bin. But there's actually, on this show, there's three categories, and they are originality, pure teen horniness, and Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose score, which is how close is it to your work now, and does it show the potential of who you are now? So the first got originality. Look, the premise wise, some of these parody songs in general are not the most original, but I did, no. I was shocked to learn that it was about Jade Goody and it was Nice Nice Lady, not a Nice Nice Lady. That did surprise me. So, I mean, you sort of level out there with the fact it's a parody. There are, it's not that original to write, you know, deep teenage poetry about love or a lack of, but the last lines are always so shocking that, I mean, I can't be shocked if it's unoriginal. And there are some certainly, I mean, fucked by reality is not particularly original. But all these various sighs that could be sighs, Simons or sighing. I mean, there's a triple meaning. You don't get that. You already had days and days in your bed. So I think for originality, hoping that I rot, I think I'm going to go for a 3 out of 5.
Okay.
For originality. Pure teen horniness. It's got to be pretty high, hasn't it? I mean, a lot of this stuff.
I would say so. If I'd shown my even earlier than this, I don't have it, but I used to have these periodic infatuations with boys at school. This is well before I ever kissed anyone. And I would write entire exercise books of love songs to them, and it would just have their name on the front. I remember, for instance, there's a boy called Stuart, who, and the first song in that book I remember because someone photocopied it and gave it to him, which was heartbreaking, but it was called Diamond in the Rough, and it was about how only I could appreciate him, and no one, all his friends just thought he was a normal lad.
Well, that is exactly the same as when someone says, you inspired me to be a comedian. That is such a slam. Yeah. No, I see you as beautiful. Trust me, I think you're beautiful. Oh, I think you're really
everyone else thinks you're normal. I think better than that.
I think you're fantastic, yeah. Okay, well, 5 out of 5 then for pure teen horniness, now that I know that as well. And finally, Mickey Mouse Club score. Does it represent who I now know you to be? I mean, your stuff is far subtler than this. But, you know, you're showing some comedic ability in this with all your double meanings. Mm. You don't really write stuff like that now.
No.
But, I mean, I've not seen you do many puns. But there's loads of double meanings. Like, I like there's layers in that. I'm a genius, but not showing it. I'm beautiful, but this and that poem. There's loads of different layers. Bruised fruit is a metaphor.
Yes,
that whole poem is a metaphor. And I don't know. I just think there's merit in some of this writing. There's comedy in the parody songs, but it's not really the same. And it is far more earnest. You're much sillier.
Yes.
You couldn't do this without undercutting it. And you at the end of these poems is absolutely not undercutting it at all. I mean,
no,
it's ramping
it's
it up times a billion. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so overcutting it some more.
It's overcutting it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll go 2 out of 5 for Mickey Mouse Club score. So that is 10 out of 15 total. That's a solid score. And now it comes to time where I've got to read you something of mine. From this exercise book. It doesn't have a title. This is clearly just penned. It's not very long, but it's clearly some sort of love poem, and it goes like this. There's always strings attached from my heart, and you were plucking on my heartstrings from the moment that we started dancing, started asking questions of affection, no correction, because the questions are still passing. When, why, how? How's right now? Because I need you. Just grab my hand and leap through all the barriers we've been through before and ask no more. And then in brackets at the bottom of the page, it says, happy ever after ends the drama. And then in separate brackets, it says, moth to the flame.
Oh, I wrote a poem called Moth to the Flame.
There we go.
Yeah. First of all, I did not expect this. So this is probably like spoken word, as in it was written to be said aloud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would read them. Yeah. I would say them, and then I'd read them out loud to no one, but thinking, fucking hell, this sounds amazing.
Yeah. Well, it does. I mean, it trips off the tongue. Makes complete sense. I don't think that's that bad. Maybe it's because I've been reading mine all afternoon, but I don't think it's that bad.
I mean, I can't stand up for when, why, how, how's right now, because I need you. I mean, that... I mean, I don't feel good about that.
I think you could sell that to an advert. I think that could be like an advert for Actimel or yogurt
that stops bloating. That's the problem with British advertising. Rather than saying this is good, British advertising is only poetry based and is terrible.
Yeah. Oh, actually, quite a lot of the banks use poems now, don't they? So I think that could be a banking advert.
Yeah, because I need you. I'm talking about higher interest rates.
Yeah, that exactly that. Or a new mortgage product.
Yeah. Okay, so I need your scores for that. You've got to score me back. So number one category, first category is originality.
I don't think it's anything like your stand-up. Oh, I'm going backwards. Originality. Originality. It sounds a lot like other poems in the world.
Yep. And so on television every 10 minutes.
Yeah. So if I was like at the back of a room and it was like an open mic and someone was doing that poem, I wouldn't be like, my jaw wouldn't drop. Like, what the fuck? What are they doing with their mouth and language? Like, someone call the police. I would be like, oh, this person's doing that. So 2.5.
Okay. And then pure teen horniness is next.
Well, it seems loving more than horny. This seems like a person who wants an emotional connection rather than like, oh, I'll win you over with this so I can have my way. And it doesn't seem, I associate horniness with unrequitedness, whereas the aim of this poem seems to be like there's an actual relationship there.
Okay. I mean, I can tell you from knowing what my life was like, it was 100% unrequited.
Oh, was it? Okay. Then 4 out of 5. 4 out of 5.
Yeah,
then.
there was nothing requited for a very long time. This was a... Yeah, this is... I know exactly what this is about.
Okay. Okay. Well, then 4 out of 5 for pure teen horniness.
And then it's Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose score.
I only found out about the Mickey Mouse Club the other day because I was listening to a podcast that's doing book reviews of Jessica Simpson's autobiography. And so they did a four-parter, which I'd really recommend. They did it for quarantine. It was so funny. So do you know this story that she kissed Justin Timberlake like more recently? And then the first thing he did after they finished snogging was text Ryan Gosling because they had a bet at the auditions for Mickey Mouse Club about which one would kiss her. So Jessica Simpson had the most cruelest thing. So she went for the audition for the Mickey Mouse Club and they were going to take 8 kids. And her audition was so bad, they decided to only take 7. Imagine having that kind of rejection at that age. They said, so she just messed up her singing.
And then she pinned the rejection letter to her door.
And
now,
that was it. Yeah,
she's
and
a huge
she's
star. She plays for Wales.
Simpson. Yeah. I'd love it if she started playing for Tottenham.
Suddenly she's signed for Spurs.
Ending.
Mourinho loves her.
Yeah. That would be another Schmeichel's the wrong end moment for me to be like, what a mashup. Jessica Simpson's playing for a London team. Oh, she's so good. I've got distracted. So, similarity to your work. I don't think it's very similar to your work at all. 2.5.
Okay, that means I score 9 out of 15 to your 10 out of 15. Yeah. It's classic. It's an absolute classic. You've been on a judging panel before. You know how to do this.
Yeah. Do you know what? Come Dine With Me, where they know that the person's had a really, really good one, but they know it's between them and them, so they really undermark them. They're like,
I think the pudding was a bit too delicious.
Yeah. Oh, and I think... In a way, I just wanted to concentrate on the food and not have those amazing guests and party. They had that band come in, so...
Yeah, exactly.
Then, yeah.
But it doesn't matter because there's no winners on this podcast. The message of this whole podcast is we're both losers. I think we've proved that. And now all that leaves is for you to play us out with your final piece.
So I found this the other day and I said to my husband... Can I show you something? I think it's the best thing I've ever done. And he was really disappointed in me as a human. I think the lyrics of this are so good that if any of your listeners wanted me to email them so they could actually appreciate, if an English teacher wants to use this with their students, for instance, or like anyone. I wrote this in my first year at university, so I was 21. So I'm not young enough, but it is... it's the story of Hamlet to the opening credits of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, long version.
It ties together everything from this episode so far, everything we've learned about you. It's a parody song. It's about English literature, which you found easy.
Yeah.
It's a real exhibitionist thing to do. I mean, yeah. Did you okay. perform this to anyone before your husband?
No, I wrote it for myself, as in, well, this will just be a really cool thing if anyone ever asks me about Hamlet.
Okay. Well, I mean, are you gonna
yeah.
rap it?
You ready? Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm not gonna rap it. I'm gonna try and enunciate so you can hear the lyrics as well. I'm gonna try and do it. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Just imagine it. Dun 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 dun. Dun, dun, dun. Now this is my story, all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down when my uncle killed my father. It's so unfair. And then he wed my mum and he became king and I'm his heir. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, dun. In Elsinore Castle, born and raised, in the graveyard is where I spend most of my days, chilling out with Yorick, a lass in all cool, when suddenly my dad appears before me as a ghoul. It was quite a surprise, it could lead to no good. Black bile equals melancholic mood. I swore one little vengeance, my mum got scared and said, stop talking to your father's ghost, dear, he's dead. I thought and pontificated day after day. Ophelia came by, but I sent her away. She gave me some letters and told me she loved me. I told her to piss off to a nunnery. I whistled for a boat, and when it came near, we all rowed it to England, stayed for several years. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern on we were to spy, but I thought, swap the letters and they'll probably die. I came back to Denmark feeling more of a hater. I yelled to my daddy, go home, I've avenged you. Back from United Kingdom, I was finally there to kill everyone who lived at Elsinore. So just imagine in a pub, you'd gone, oh, what's your favourite Shakespeare play? And I thought, I've been waiting for this my entire life. And I just put my baseball cap on backwards and broke into that.
That is, I mean, it is genuinely exceptional. It's a good, that's actually a good revision tool.
Yeah,
I mean,
isn't
it would be really
it?
Helpful if you're
there.
Studying Hamlet. What a great way
Did
to remember the story.
Did you hear when I said black bile equals melancholic mood? Did yeah. you hear when I said that? Yeah. That's deep knowledge.
That's analysis. That is yeah. that is Cliff Notes stuff.
Yeah.
In the graveyard is where I spent most of my days is exceptional.
Yeah. Right.
I didn't see that coming for some reason. I was thinking when you first announced it, I thought, what's she going to do with in the playground shooting yeah. b-ball and then a lassing all cool.
I'm so glad you heard it. Yeah.
Well, of course, you've just mentioned Yorick. All I associate yes. with Yorick is a lass, poor Yorick. Yeah. A lassing all cool. go home, I've avenged you.
Yeah.
Get out of here, I've avenged you, for fuck's sake. Yeah. Leave me alone.
Come on, I've done it.
I mean, Sarah, that is exceptional. Presumably you feel no shame about that at all, and just pride.
I what can I do with it? What can I do with it? I mean, I guess I could do my own GCSE bite size, but then I would have to, maybe that's what I'll do with parody songs. Maybe I'll be the first TED Talk who's just doing parody songs. Or, actually, it's so obvious, I should write a sitcom about Hamlet. And this is the
theme tune, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my god, it's just Hamlet goes to live with his uncle. I mean, that's the whole.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Oh my god. There it was, Sarah Pascoe's incredible early work. Look out for the Fresh Prince of Denmark coming soon in sitcom form to presumably Comedy Central. Given how they clearly listen to this show, now they're basically making it themselves. Big fan of Sarah's accidental three definitions of size there. We've got sizes in sighing, sizes in Simon, and sizes in physical size. Classic. It's basically the realize, but for real size. Real size, feel size, real size. And you can pick which size goes where in that. Only I know what I was thinking. That's some deep shit, okay? Sarah, obviously, is very successful. She's got a sitcom on iPlayer at the moment, which is excellent. You should check out. She's got a couple of books. They're both brilliant. She's got a podcast, billion TV appearances, a stand-up special. I mean, she's just incredibly successful, okay? There's no way that you're here because of me and not her. So you've already seen all of that stuff, so fair enough. But if you haven't seen any little bit, complete the puzzle and go and watch it, because she truly is one of the best that we have in this country. And may I say, the world. Please do leave a review for this podcast, Early Work, and subscribe, and make sure you tell your bubble about it. And I will see you next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.